Maybe it will be, but it still doesn't make much sense for us to travel together, even in the same elevator. There's no guessing how well Ryvich has this place under surveillance. I was about to argue, but part of me knew that what he said was right. Like Koea, Dieterling couldn't safely leave the surface of Sky's Edge without running the risk of being arrested on war crimes charges. They were both listed in system-wide databases, and, save for the fact that Koea was dead, they both had hefty bounties on their heads. "All right," I said. "I suppose there's another reason for you to stay. I'll be away from the reptile house for some time now. 3 days at the very least. There should be someone competent looking after things back home." "Are you certain you can handle Ryvich on your own?" I shrugged. "It only takes one shot, Miguel."
"And you're the man to deliver it."
He was visibly relieved. "Fine, then. I'll drive back to the reptile house tonight, and I'll be watching the news feeds avidly. I'll try not to disappoint. Wish me well."
"I do."
Dieterling reached out and shook my hand.
"Be careful, Tanner. Just because there's no bounty on your head, it doesn't mean you'll be able to walk away without doing a little explaining first. I'll leave it to you to work out how to dispose of the gun."
I nodded.
"You miss it so badly. I'll buy you one for your birthday."
He looked at me for a long moment, as if on the point of saying something more, then nodded and turned away from the thread. I watched him leave the chamber, exiting back into the shadowed gloom of the concourse. He began to adjust the coloration of his coat as he walked. His broad-backed figure shimmered as it receded. I turned around myself, facing the elevator, waiting for my ride, and then slipped my hand into my pocket, resting it against the diamond-hard coolness of the gun.
Chapter 3. "Sir, dinner will be served on the lower deck in 15 minutes if you intend to join the other passengers." I jumped, not having heard anyone's footsteps on the staircase which led up to the observation deck. I'd assumed I was completely alone. All the other passengers had retired to their rooms immediately upon boarding, the journey just long enough to justify unpacking their luggage. But I had gone up to the observation deck to watch our departure. I had a room, but nothing that I needed to unpack. The ascent had begun with ghostly smoothness. At first it hardly seemed like we were moving at all. There had been no sound, no vibration, just an eerily smooth glide moving imperceptibly slowly, but which was always gaining speed. I had looked down, trying to see the cultists, but the angle of the view made it impossible to see more than a few stragglers, rather than the mass that must have been directly below. We had just been passing through the ceiling iris when the voice had startled me. I turned around. A servitor had spoken to me, not a man. It had extensible arms and an excessively stylized head, but instead of legs or wheels, its torso tapered to a point below the machine's waist, like a wasp's thorax. It moved around on a rail attached to the ceiling, to which the robot was coupled via a curved spar protruding from its back. "Sir," it began again, this time in Norte, "dinner will be served."
"No, I understood you first time." I thought about the risk involved in mixing with real aristocrats, then decided that it was probably less than that involved in remaining suspiciously aloof. At least if I sat down with them, I could provide them with a fictitious persona which might pass muster, rather than allowing their imaginations free rein to sketch in whatever details they wished to impose on this uncommunicative stranger. Speaking Norte now, I needed the practice. I said, "I'll join the others in a quarter of an hour. I'd like to watch the view for a little while."
"Very well, sir."